see you game 7 Saturday night.
702, check that. 703 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour one of the program in the books. No guests. 100% pure, unfiltered Halford and Bruff. Halbro juice, they call it. They don't call it that. Hour two is underway. Hour two of Halford and Bruff is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Friendly reminder, you can download hour one of the podcast. Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your Halbro, just download it now. We didn't do a single Ask Us Anything in the first hour either. We spent almost the entirety of it talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and then the Boston Bruins. What have we become? Who are we? What have we done?
Everything we hate.
It's not good. One team that we did talk about in that intro as well is the Edmonton Oilers. Edmonton Oilers forced Game 7 with a big victory in Los Angeles last night. Joining us now to break it all down, Jack Michaels from the Oilers play-by-play team here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Morning, fellas. How are you?
We're good, thanks. We talked a lot about gutsy performances last night across the National Hockey League. That's how I kind of coined what the Oilers did last night. No Darnell Nurse, the huge loss to the lineup. They come out, they get the lead. That lead gets frittered away in the third period, but they find a way to get the job done. Was that kind of the talking point in the aftermath, that the Oilers just got it done, thanks in large part to some really solid performances across the board, but once again, a lot of Connor McDavid from Jay Woodcroft last night?
Well, it's probably the best game he's ever played. I mean, it really was, and he had the 3 points, but just the defensive plays he made in the third period of the game tied at 2, and obviously, you know, the play he made on the empty netter free Evander Kane for the goal that finally sealed. I just thought he was magnificent. And, you know, it is probably, I would suggest to you, you know, one of two victories they've had in the postseason that they can kind of hang their hats on. The other being Game 5 in overtime against San Jose, which led to really their only playoff series win. So now you force a Game 7, you get it back to Edmonton, and you do it behind another guy. I mean, Leon Draisaitl got slew-footed in a scrum by Mikey Anderson in the first period last night, and he played on half a leg. I mean, Leon Draisaitl just refused to leave that game, and he was laboring, and you know, there he is with the primary assist on the game winner. It was a real solid night for, you know, the two of the top five players in the world. They helped the Oilers get there, and probably the best midseason acquisition since Patrick Waugh was acquired by the Colorado Avalanche a quarter century ago. Played a big role in it too, as Kane had another 2-goal night. It was, you know, you talk about a gut check. That was certainly one that Edmonton passed, but it's only going to last another 24 hours because, of course, a loss in Game 7 would make Game 6 irrelevant, at least to this group. I mean, they do not want to go out in the first round for a third year in a row.
It's funny. I remember earlier in the series, Duncan Keith talking about the crowd and how the crowd might have been trying to help the Edmonton Oilers at home at Rogers Place, but maybe got them a little overexcited. They've only won one game at home in this series with two pretty impressive wins down in LA. What are the challenges facing such a big game and that game being at home?
Well, I think Duncan Keith was basically sending a message to his own teammates. Hey, like, this is the playoffs. You can't be nervous in game one. And I don't think he was kind of laying it at the feet of the crowd. I think his point was, hey, you know, this is the time of year. Like, we can't be worried about nerves. We can't be worried about how amped up we are. We got to go out and play. And that's the biggest thing. The Oilers now have to take advantage of a pretty seismic shift in momentum, because you know, no one is thinking more about how this game got away than the LA Kings. But on the other hand, the Kings have also won two games on the road in this series in a hostile environment. And they've been better on the road all year long. Only Calgary in the Western Conference had a better road record than the LA Kings. This is how they got to the playoffs, because their home record was second worst only to Washington. So they've been a good road team. They've beaten Edmonton three times in Edmonton, just as, you know, the Oilers had done it to LA going into last night. Now they've got four victories. So, you know, this has been a series where, what was it? Costanza up was down, left was right, you know, the opposite, right? You know, it's a hard series to say that there's any sort of momentum. There's an old saying in Major League Baseball that momentum is as good as the next day's starting pitcher. And I would suggest to you that any momentum for Edmonton is as good as its start in Game 7, because that has put Edmonton in trouble in this series, their inability to get out of the starting blocks. They scored in the first 100 seconds in Game 6, and in a series where there have been no lead changes, the entire series, no lead changes, first goal is won every time. I have to think that the importance of a good start and that first goal will hold true in Game 7. But having said that, the way the series has gone, I'm sure there'll be eight lead changes on Saturday night.
Hey, Jack, for all the talk of Evander Kane when he was signing with the Edmonton Oilers, there was really no debate about his quality as a hockey player, and everyone would agree that this guy is a really good hockey player, and he's shown it with 7 goals in 6 games for the Edmonton Oilers. What do you think the plan going forward is for the Edmonton Oilers with Evander Kane? Can they afford to re-sign him? Would they want to re-sign him to a long-term contract? We've seen long-term contracts go badly for other teams when it comes to Evander Kane.
Well, that's a very good question. And I honestly think there are so many other factors that would play into whether or not Evander Kane gets a contract than nearly his contributions in this regular season and postseason. I think certainly for the kind of deal that he's going to command, and he will, Edmonton is going to have to make a move or two to create room for a Evander Kane signing. I just don't see, you know, how it works with the kind of contract he would have signed, for instance, in San Jose. And I'm not sure he's going to get that kind of deal, but someone's going to step up to the plate and sign him for dollars that, at least on the surface right now, Edmonton can't afford. That, to be honest with you, I hate to sound like, you know, either a player or management, but because of the intricacies involved and because of where we're at right now, that I can assure you is not only the farthest thing from the team's mind, but also Evander Kane, because I guarantee you, he's going to want to sit back and wait and see what deal exactly comes his way. Because, I think some Edmontonians have pie-in-the-sky hopes that he'll say, well, I'm playing with Connor McDavid, I'll just take a 2-year deal at 4 per. I mean, I don't see that happening at all. So that one is pretty far ahead, at least Edmonton hopes, in terms of checking off boxes. But again, in a Game 7, anything can happen. So it might be something they have to look at starting Sunday morning.
We're speaking to Jack Michaels, play-by-play voice of the Edmonton Oilers, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Curious to get your thoughts on the coaching here, because this was obviously going to be a pressure-packed situation for Jay Woodcroft. And to be honest, anyone that coaches Connor McDavid, they're always going to be under the microscope because of deployment and how much do you use them or how little did you use them. And we brought this up in the intro. I noticed yesterday that, and it doesn't sound like really advanced coaching when you put it this way, but when the game was on the line and the series was on the line and the season was on the line, the best idea was to give the best hockey player in the world the most minutes, more than anybody on the team. And that's what Woodcroft did. McDavid played 24 minutes last night. That was more than any other forward and more than any other defenseman. And, you know, when you can get a victory on the road where Cody Ceci leads your defenseman in ice time and has 2 assists, You've obviously done something right as a coach. When you guys were calling a game last night and watching this one, did you notice just how much he was leaning on McDavid early? Because I think he played with every Oilers forward in the first period.
Absolutely, we did. I mean, here's what happened last night. First of all, Darnell Nurse was suspended for game six. So, I mean, Cody Ceci's been a first-pairing guy for the Oilers for the last 3.5 months, and he's been playing with Darnell Nurse, and you knew he was going to lead the club on the back end in ice time without Nurse in the lineup. Secondly, Jay Woodcroft elected to go with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, and for the first time all year, Warren Fogle was scratched. He had been the only Oiler to play in every single game. What was intriguing and what Jay Woodcroft deserves a lot of credit for, actually two things. Number one, when they landed, they went straight into a team meeting here at the hotel in downtown Los Angeles. And Jay Woodcroft said, all that matters is one game. We need to win one game. You need to play like you need to win one game. And I'm going to coach like we need to win one game. And it's a game that we've won 3 separate times in the last couple of months, meaning in Los Angeles. So he coached to win it to get back to game 7. And the other wrinkle that surprised me, and I think, quite frankly, flummoxed LA, is when you go 11-7, you think, all right, we're going to have 3 centers rotate in on the fourth line. Well, what he got was he rotated McDavid in on the second shift. And all of a sudden, when Evander Kane had a play on the left half boards, McDavid, who had just changed, was back on the ice and ended up scoring on a wraparound for the first goal. And that really set LA back on its heels because the Oilers continued to do that at various times. It wasn't just 1, 2, 3 over the boards. Draisaitl or McDavid in on the fourth line. That's not how he played it at all. He put them with any combination, any which way you slice it. At times, Nugent Hopkins got skipped. And that's why the double shifting, I think, was so effective because it wasn't your typical 11-7 maneuver. And, you know, to be honest with you, I the only thing that surprises me is that McDavid didn't play more than 24 minutes because it seemed like he was out there a ton. And, you know, look, balancing the minutes is great. But when you looked at, you know, game 5 and you saw every Edmonton forward under 20 minutes, the temptation would be to say, well, you lost a game in overtime. Maybe if you'd played the guy, you know, an extra minute or two, it would have pushed you over the top. With the season on the line, Jay Woodcroft elected to put McDavid and Drysdale together to start a game for the first time since he took over as coach in early February. And like so many of his moves since he took over as head coach, it worked.
How hurt is Drysdale right now, if you had to guess?
I think he's no better than 60%. I think he might have upper and lower body injuries, and he's not feeling well. I mean, his last few avails, clearly he's got, you know, the traditional cold. I mean, obviously they're testing, so it's non-COVID related, but he's not feeling well. And he's playing banged up significantly. Again, 60%, I would say no better than that.
Jack, I want to thank you for doing this today. It's going to be a very exciting Game 7 on Saturday and a very exciting day of Game 7s on Saturday. Enjoy it, and we will talk to you at some point in the near future, regardless of how this series ends up. But enjoy Saturday.
Look forward to it, fellas. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack Michaels, the play-by-play voice of the Edmonton Oilers, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Yeah, it was interesting to watch yesterday. And, you know, it seems almost stupid to say a good way to win a hockey game is play the best player on the planet the most out of anybody. But you have to find ways to do it. And in a one game where you're just trying to survive, McDavid played 24 minutes, which was more than any other player on the Oilers roster, and he was very, very good last night. Jack said it might have been the best game of his career.
Well, yeah, it might have been. I mean, he set the tone right away with a goal, and he played so much. I mean, the thing you have to remember about Connor McDavid, and something that we've been, you know, harping on for a while now, he hasn't really played that many big games in the NHL relative to other superstars. We got to talk to Joe Leary now.
Oh, right. Sorry.
I was wondering what you were doing.
I'm sorry. That's on me. I was like, what's he doing now? I forgot. We have another guest right now joining us from Just Here for the Beer Radio. Our good buddy, longtime friend of the program, Joe Leary, here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. It has been a minute, has it not?
It has been a while. And I thought, you know, there's no better thing to talk about at 7:15, now 7:17 in the morning, than beer. Get us up to speed, because when we used to do the show back in the day, you would be a regular rotation Friday guest where we would set everyone up for the weekend and talk about what's up coming Just Here for the Beer Radio and everything that's going on in the local beer industry. So get us caught up to speed, Joe. How's the last little bit been?
Well, it's obviously been a challenging time, but good news is that everybody seems to have managed to adapt to the new normal, and now that restrictions have been lifted, and it seems that business is as usual, I guess. The breweries are thriving. It's an incredible situation, because it was really dire for everybody, certainly not just breweries, but the whole situation was pretty dire, and rules were implemented and regulations were eased so that brewers could throw outdoor patios or a little bit of stripping on the sidewalk, so at least they could give some reason to have some areas to consume. But now it seems that they've come through it with shining colors. A lot of new beers were introduced. A lot of regulations, as they say, were kind of eased so that they were able to get their product to market, be it by delivery service or whatever method they chose. But yeah, it's a thriving industry right now, and we're celebrating this weekend with a look at the areas. We've been doing these neighborhood shows of late, because virtually every community now has a beer neighborhood and a couple or three or four maybe in a confined area. So this week we're focusing on the area of Mount Pleasant and the many great breweries there.
So which ones will you guys be, we actually used to have an office in Mount Pleasant, oddly enough, right across the street from Brassneck Brewing, one of the long-standing ones in the area. Who will you guys be profiling this weekend on Just Here for the Beer?
What a beautiful segue, Mike, that in fact, Brassneck is one of them. The first time they've actually been on our show. It took us going to them to have them on the radio show, but Brassneck, who've been there, I think, 9 years now, so they're one of the OGs when you consider, and certainly in that neighborhood. We'll be talking with Nigel from Brassneck Brewing. As well, right across the street from that, they're opening the new Steamworks. This is a Steamworks called Steamworks Mount Pleasant, but it's a brew pub along with 16 or something like that taps. They'll be opening later on this summer with a big patio right at Main and 7th, so we'll be talking to the folks behind that. We'll talk to the B of R&B. That's a man named Barry Benson. R&B Brewing is celebrating its 25th anniversary. And they've got something called 25 Years and 25 Beers. So they're coming out with some really special beers to fulfill that obligation, including one which is a dill pickle goza. So it just goes to show how beer it continues to.
I'm sorry. Was that a dill pickle goza?
Heard that right. Yeah, dill pickle goza. Huh. You know, again, not every beer is for everybody. I always make the comparison. I like vegetables, but I don't like all vegetables. Some that I just cannot tolerate. And same kind of thing with beer. I mean, it may not be for you and I, and it's not, but somebody out there will go, wow, dill pickle goza, I gotta try that. So they will, that's R&B Brewing, they will be on the show as well. And we'll speak with Mauricio from Faculty Brewing, as well as we will be recording the show at Main Street Brewing. And Main Street is really cool because it is one of the original brewers. I think it was called Vancouver Brewery back in the late 1800s. And their location has been declared heritage. It's a really cool structure that obviously maintains its original configuration because of the heritage status. But it was where Brewery Creek was. So back in the day, there were like horse-drawn carriages which were transporting barrels of beer to the creek and back and to the consumer base. And so we'll be doing our show from there, and it airs Sunday night at 10 o'clock.
It's our old stomping ground. I remember Main Street Brewing as well. If folks want to listen once again, I know you threw it out there already, but if folks want to listen to this tour through Yeast Van on the weekend, what times will the show be airing over Saturday and Sunday?
The show will air on Sunday night at 10 p.m. We will repeat the show on Wednesday because, as we always say, even though the show hasn't aired yet, the feedback has been so positive. Sportsnet has graciously said, we've got to play it twice, Joe. So we're going to do that again on Wednesday night. So Sunday night, 10 p.m., our show dedicated to the Main Street Mount Pleasant BIA, which is the Business Improvement Association, as we show you the great brewers of that neighborhood.
The show's so nice. They air it twice. Joe, thanks for doing this, bud. We really appreciate it. Be well. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks,
we'll talk soon.
Yeah, you bet. Cheers.
Thanks. That's Joe Leary from Just Here for the Beer Radio here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Let's do some Ask Us Anything. This is Ask Us Anything Friday on the Halford and Bruff Show. Craig and Campbell River. I feel like Craig and Campbell River in some ways is our, like, we, I don't know, spirit animal. I don't know. He supports England too, right?
Ooh,
Craig
is our spirit animal.
Don't you know that? Don't you remember?
All the Campbell River people tend to blur into one another.
Really?
But Craig's a good one.
Okay. Ask Us Anything. When I watch the Leafs in the playoffs, I want them to lose so badly it's difficult to even watch them play. I get extremely anxious and constantly have to look away and channel flip to relax. I realize this is the same thing I do when the Canucks are in the playoffs. Do I hate the Leafs as much as I love the Canucks? Do you guys suffer from this? I almost feel bad having any strong emotions attached to Toronto. I'm so confused. Hey, I have to admit, my emotions are engaged during a Toronto Maple Leafs game. And whether you think this is lame or dumb or you feel the same way or whatever, like, I have to admit that, like, I want the Leafs to embarrass themselves. Mm-hmm. It's just, I have talked about this before. I am a petty sports fan. I do not want any other team to have success, especially those in Canada, unless it's the Vancouver Canucks. I do not want to feel jealous. And I think that's the feeling that I'm most terrified of, that feeling of watching another fan base celebrate.
Mm-hmm. So what Craig is talking about here is the acknowledgement of emotional investment, regardless of what the emotion is,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the thing, is that you can't say that you don't care about the Toronto Maple Leafs, because you do.
Yeah.
You care a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You have to acknowledge that. And it's almost like, well, This thing that I loathe, it's like, remember when George gets so turned on because the woman hates him so much? There's a difference.
It's intoxicating.
There's a difference between someone not really acknowledging that you exist, which is tough because you're like, this person doesn't care about me at all. But then this person hates me so much. But there's an investment there regardless, right? That's the thing. The emotion can be twisted. Like, you can't hate something unless you really care about it. You can't love something unless you really care about it.
So
I understand what Craig's talking about in his text.
But you know what? Thank God. Otherwise, like, what could we have enjoyed about the playoffs for the last, six of 7 years? The Canucks haven't been part of them. And for me, I can watch a good game without emotional investment and be like, that was a good game. I had fun. But emotional investment, if I do have an emotional investment, whether it's my favorite team playing or a team that I really want to lose, whatever, mm-hmm. it makes it a million times better.
Like, here's the thing. Right now, for the start of the show, there are two Canadian teams that are going into Game 7s on home ice with a ton at stake. A ton. Edmonton mm-hmm. has a ton at stake. Jobs could be lost in Edmonton. But I challenge someone to tell me that the Edmonton story is more intriguing than the Toronto story.
Yeah, it feels different, doesn't it? Why is that?
Because
it's not like, I mean, I guess Edmonton has been past the first round in the last few, they went on like kind of a mini run a few years ago. Well, is that a factor, it's Edmonton?
I think it is Edmonton. Edmonton's just not Toronto. There's such, because again, especially living in Vancouver, you get Leafs content crammed down your throat and you get the hype of a team that hasn't really done anything to justify it.
Yeah.
You just don't get that with Edmonton because it's Edmonton. I mean, I can't explain it anything more than that. It's like, it's a cool story. And I love talking up about Connor McDavid's the best player on the planet. And they leaned on him so heavily last mm-hmm. night and he delivered with maybe the best game of his career. But I mean,
is there an acknowledgement that the Leafs are a better team than Edmonton too? Like, if the Leafs played the Oilers in a playoff series, I bet the betting line would favor the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Which is weird because the Oilers would have the best player in the series.
But, well, not according to the Hart Trophy voting this year. Yeah. But I think just overall, isn't there an acknowledgement that the Leafs are a better, more complete team?
Let's ask this question of our next guest. We're getting barked at to go to break because we have to have Jeff Merrick on the show. We have a finite amount of time to talk to Jeff. He'll be joining us at 7:30, and then he'll be hosting his own show right here on Sportsnet beginning at 9 o'clock. Jeff Merrick next on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Thank you. 3 on a Friday. Sweet, sweet Friday. It is Halford and his Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour 2 of this program is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. Dom is still speaking with our next guest, Jeff Merrick, host of The Jeff Merrick Show, which you'll hear right here on Sportsnet 650. Public service announcement for those asking. A lot of people texting in wanting to know what Saturday is going to look like from a scheduling perspective, because there's not one, not two, but three game sevens on Saturday. The first is an afternoon, a matinee affair for us on the West Coast. Boston, Carolina, from Raleigh, game 7, 1:30 our time on Saturday. That is then followed by, would we call it the main course? I guess we have to. It's Leafs, it's Bolts, 4 o'clock our time from Toronto, game 7. I think we know everything on the slate there. And then?
Then dessert, Kings and Oilers, game 7, and that's a 7 o'clock start our time.
That is going to be a big couch grooving day. That's a lot of game 7 all in a row. Let's go to the phone lines now, joined by our next guest, who I would assume is equally excited for three game 7s on a single day. Jeff Merrick here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Jeffrey?
So it sounds like you have a lot of ironing to do this weekend of the couch with your ass, as I understand it, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly here.
That is correct.
Yeah, got to work on the couch groove, and it'll be getting a lot of work on Saturday.
We
could get a lot of Sunday too, Jeff, to be honest, because we got three opportunities tonight to have these games pushed to game 7 as well.
Yeah, I know this one. I mean, this could be one of those, you know, take the phone off the hook. Actually, who takes phones off hooks? Phones aren't off hooks anymore. I think you get what I'm trying to say. This is one of those, like, yeah, hold my calls, you know, to your significant other. Can you look after the kids? I've got a lot of eyeball massaging to do here as I watch hockey, high-stakes hockey games. Listen, man, this should be a great weekend. Like, this is awesome. Like, the nice thing about not having really any skin in the game and all this is you can just sort of sit back and enjoy it for what it is and not have to go through the Lady Macbeth hand-wringing that, you know, all these fan bases are going through right now. Like, you don't get the euphoria when your team wins, but you don't get the anxiety that comes along with a situation like this. So for a guy like me, it's a good trade-off.
Hey, Jeff, do you think the Leafs are more scared of losing or more excited to win Game 7?
That is an amazing question. And I think traditionally it's always been the fear of losing. And the fear of losing, that is such a great question. The fear of losing is what froze them last year against the Montreal Canadiens. Like, what we saw last year with the, well, I think it's a couple of things. I mean, there's this, you know, success phobia that we've all been reading about lately, you know, fear of success, fear of triumph. I mean, it is a legitimate thing that not just athletes go through, but, you know, regular human beings in their everyday lives go through as well. But I think, God, that's a good question. I think that up until this season, it's been a fear of losing. But this is a different team. You know, we've talked to the last time we were on together, maybe the time previous, we talked about how skilled players figure things out eventually. The history of this league is, you know, skilled players get unstuck and figure things out. You know, water always finds its way, and that's what skilled players have always done in just about every single sport. And I think that's probably where the Maple Leafs are at right now, where it's not we're scared to lose, it's more an excitement to win. But that is a great question. And in the spirit of greatness borrows, but genius steals, consider that question stolen here in a couple of hours.
Yeah, sure. I just think it's fascinating because there is an element of, you know, you hear some people, even if they're like great champions, they'll say like, it was not how much I love winning. It was how much I hate losing. But I think it's different with a team when you're thinking about what happens if you lose. And I just don't know how the Leafs could avoid that. And I'm wondering if you're Sheldon Keefe, what is your message to the team? If you're one of the leaders, what is the message to the team?
I think Keith's been really good the last few days. I think like maybe the last like 5, maybe 6 days, it's kind of been his best work as the head coach of the Maple Leafs, both on and off the ice. And his message after game five, I thought, nailed it. And it was quite simplistic. You know, the team is very close. We're right here. We're one win away, but none of it means anything if we don't close the deal. And there was, it's not, you know, like a wild overreaction. It's not, you know, lean into hyperbole or anything like that, or lean into over the top cliches. It's just quite simple. Guys, great job, but none of it means anything if we don't close the deal. That, and it's very calm. Like, if you're, I was talking to the crew at Sportsnet Central about this last night. Like, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs here, the key to all of it is keep everything as relaxed as possible. You know, let your fans be anxious. Let your fans be nervous. Let them have all of that. Go about your lives, your hockey players. 5-on-5, the Maple Leafs have shown that at worst, they're able to keep up with the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, one of the best teams in the NHL. And at best, they've been better 5-on-5 than the defending Stanley Cup champion. And the most remarkable thing out of all of it, which if you told me this at the beginning of the, well, at any time of the year, really, that Jack Campbell was going to outplay Andrei Vasilevskiy, I would tell you were foolish, but here we are. That, to me, is the freaky story through all of this. We all thought the Maple Leafs were going to have to do this despite the goaltending. Can make the argument that they're doing this because of the goaltending, specifically that breakaway save on Nick Paul in game five, which I think the whole series has completely hinged on.
Yeah, I just wonder if it will come down to the goalies in the end and who's going to get the upper hand. Jack Campbell played really well against Montreal for most of the series. And then he let in the stinker, and you're kind of like,
the Gallagher
that's
a goal.
That's what you remember, which is so unfair, but that's the reality of game sevens. Like, for example, if last night had been a game seven and the Leafs were no longer in the playoffs, that would have been the Alex Kerfoot game. Oh yeah. Remember Alex Kerfoot, who had the bad giveaway, the bad penalty, the multiple chances to score, and he couldn't get it done. That was the Alex Kerfoot game. Fortunately for Alex, it wasn't. I just wonder, like, I'm so curious to see what the storyline is for game seven. I bet we could go through a bunch of different scenarios and it would be something else.
So here's the question that I've been thinking about, going into last night's game and then certainly coming out of it and anticipating a game seven on Saturday. You know, we all went into the season saying, if they don't get out of the first round, there's going to be massive changes. There's going to be, you know, they're going to look at players, they're going to look at coaches, they're going to look at managers. Like, how, the only question was, how far up the food chain do they go? But when you consider how this series has been played, and now it's all coming down to one game, when you consider how the Maple Leafs have played, how the quote-unquote core four, right, the ones that Dubas has gambled on, how they've performed, how they've played, have the Maple Leafs done enough here to keep the torches away from the Castle Gate if they lose against Tampa? Like, if it's a blowout, forget it, all bets are off. But if it's they lose by a goal, do we see changes? Because we assume that first-round failure is going to mean changes. Mm. Given how the Maple Leafs have played, I don't know if that's true anymore, unless it's a blowout in Game 7, unless they're complete no-shows in Game 7. How do you guys feel about that?
I understand what you're saying. I think it mostly comes down to pressure of market versus staying the course. And I'm not sure if you can stay the course if the narrative remains the same. I understand that the loss in game seven might be different, is what you're alluding to. It could be triple overtime, you lose a heartbreaker. I'm not sure that makes enough of a difference as opposed to a blowout, because the reality is you can't get out of the first round. You can't get out of the first round. Right? It looks different. It looks the same. It's still the same result. That's how I kind of see it.
There might be roster things that they have to address too, right? Like Giordano will not be back probably next year, so they might have to address that. But I'm kind of with you on this, Jeff. And I wonder if, I'm sure Kyle Dubas would be with this. His message is kind of like, you just got to keep trying. Like, hockey's weird. It can be unfair. It can be cruel. I always think back to the Washington Capitals, how, you know, for years and years they would come up short. And they actually had this two-year stretch where their general manager said, this is our two-year window. That two-year window expired, and then they won the Stanley Cup the next year, right? Like, it's it's just keep putting good teams together, and hopefully it's you break through at some point.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're a Maple Leafs fan or a Maple Leafs observer, you're well past the phase of, we don't care about wins and losses. We just need to know, are the kids getting better? Okay, well, the kids aren't the kids anymore. So you ask yourself, okay, how good can this team be, and are they still improving? And do you look year over year and say, this Maple Leaf team is still improving? Or have they hit the ceiling? Or is there more that they can still achieve, and they're up against like the one team I think that we all looked at, even though they sputtered into the playoffs, the team that we looked at and we all said, nobody wants a part of Tampa. Nobody, no other team can flip the switch. No other team has obviously Victor Hedman who can take over games, breakers like Stamkos and Kucherov to say nothing of Point and Cirelli and go right down the list. And really good depth players and a really good back end. And the person who, the minute the playoffs start, is the presumptive favorite to win the Conn Smythe Trophy in Andrei Vasilevskiy. The Maple Leafs have been right there with them and have outplayed them. That's why I keep coming back to this idea that if you take the aerial view here, what's the sane thing to do? Like, not the emotional thing. And I understand that sports is always that tug between what your head knows and what your heart feels. And if you lose, the heart is going to lead. And that's why it's never a good idea to make decisions when your heart is leading. But if you're thinking about it and, okay, are they getting better and they just had a tough draw? Who knows? But what would be the cost? Like, what would be the long-term cost of making too rash a decision should they lose on Saturday? And is it worth that gamble? To me, it's a fascinating question.
Well, it's a fascinating situation. It's a fascinating series, and I can't wait until Saturday. As much as people in this market will say things like "I can't stand the Leafs," well, you have an emotional involvement then. Like, you'll be into this game, and I was very much into last night's game, and a tiny bit of me felt sorry for the Leafs fans, tiny bit, but I got over that. Jeff,
you got over that quickly.
Yeah, I got over it quick because I was like, yeah, screw them. I had to go through it. They can go through it too.
Hey, do we have any chips left?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to bed. We're speaking with Jeff Merrick on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Let's talk a bit about the Vancouver Canucks, Jeff.
Sure.
Jim Rutherford said in his press conference that Bruce Boudreau has until June 1st to decide. So Rutherford said he can take whatever time he wants, but then he said, but the longer you leave things, these type of things start to fester a bit, because then they become more emotional. Now, he said it's our job that we don't let it become emotional, and for the wrong reasons, it gets off the tracks. I know you and Friedge have talked about this situation, and you've kind of like, I don't know if it was you or Friedge, but you're just like, this whole thing is weird. There was a recent report that Bruce Boudreau wants to come back. He's anticipating being back, but there are just a few quote unquote minor details that need to be ironed out. Okay. What do you make of that?
I think that one of the details, this is what I believe based on conversations. I believe one of the details is, who are the assistant coaches, and does Bruce Boudreau get to pick all of his assistant coaches? Does Jim Rutherford get one assistant coach? Like, I'm of the belief, again, this is just me, that is one of the issues here. I'm sure there are other issues that are involved at this point, but I believe that is certainly one of them. And you can understand, like, that's big for a head coach.
That obviously doesn't seem minor. Like, that seems like you're telling me who I'm going to fill out my coaching staff with.
It happens. Sometimes GMs want one of their guys on the bench. I get it. Like, it's not new. That's, kind of the history of this league. I mean, coaches, of course, always want, their own crew, but it's not, beyond the, beyond the pale to have a general manager have, one of his assistants on the bench. So I believe that that is one of the issues. And you're right, that isn't a tiny one. Like, that's your coaching staff. Like, I get that. It just very much, like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a couple of upset people here. Okay, like, I'm sure that, again, we'll go bird's eye on this one. I understand if I'm Jim Rutherford being upset at how all the information and all the discussion about Boudreaux's contract got out. I get that. And if I'm Rutherford, I'm probably not pleased about it. So I can understand where, I don't want to say he's upset, but I could understand someone getting their back up. Let's put it that way. And I could understand as well, Bruce Boudreaux hearing things about structure and exits and how the team played and how they were just saved by their goaltender. I can understand if I'm Bruce Boudreaux, I'm going to get my back up about that as well. So we have in this situation, two parties, and listen, it's Vancouver. So this all gets played out very, very publicly. Like in any really, you know, in a high level, elite level hockey market where there's, you know, a number of really, you know, engaged and intelligent hockey fans, these things all get, blown up. So I understand why this is a big deal. You have two parties who both have their backs up. I think you have two parties as well that have, you know, a legitimate reason to have their backs up as well, which is why, you know, I mean, listen, I mean, when you guys argue, do you take it out in public? Do you put it on the show, or do you just call one another and scream and yell, or, you know, go out for a beer and, you know, drop a few bombs on each other and then the whole thing is settled? Or do you play it out on the radio show?
I set his house on fire. Just a small one in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. Generally, a controlled fire, with all due respect. Just it's a controlled fire, but just a sentence.
Never during the summer, because I'm a responsible arsonist.
True. I really appreciate that part of it.
You're thoughtful that way. Yeah. This is Elliot's point. I think it's the right one, too. Like, this one needs to be settled, I think, privately, and I think quietly with the two parties, you know. And these guys, like, listen, Boudreaux and Rutherford have a long past, have a long history. You know, they were, I mean, geez, crying out loud, they were both camp counselors at the Orr Walton Sports Camp, you know, like in Simcoe, however many decades ago. Like, these guys are not strangers to one another by any stretch of the imagination. To me, this is one. You know, these are two guys that have, you know, forgotten more about hockey than any of us will ever know. These guys have seen it all, done it all, been part of it, had awkward conversations, had angry conversations. If there are any two people in the NHL universe that can just go into a room and hash it out, it's probably Boudreaux and Rutherford. And I think Elliot's point is the right one. It's probably a good idea if they do that.
Jeff, I know we got to let you go, which is too bad because there's a million other things I wanted to get into. There's the Edmonton stuff. Russo just dropped the bomb on Minnesota.
What is it?
The headline. The Wild never fail to disappoint when it matters the most. So I'm going to spend my break reading that. That should be a tasty skewering there. I know you got to prep. I know you got to show ahead. So we'll let you go. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Quick note on Minnesota. Like, we're all wondering what happened to Marc-Andre Fleury here. We're all, I think, on the same page about what happens to Kevin Fiala. It is going to take major, major surgery to the roster to keep him in the mix. That's probably headed towards the draft day trade. And I wonder about Cam Talbot, guys.
Yeah,
I really do. You know, the end of the season that he had, only to, you know, to sit for pretty much the, you know, sit for 2 weeks essentially without playing a game, and then be ushered into duty.
Unbelievable.
And,
you know, good luck.
Just saying, like, please save our season, Cam. There's going to be some massaging here. And the one thing I will say about Minnesota, and the one thing that we've learned about Bill Guerin, he is not afraid of making a big move.
Yep.
And he's not afraid of conflict. He's not afraid of big moves. So, you know, listen, Parisi and Suter, those buyouts were a huge shock, but he had the stones to do it. And if there's anyone that would make enormous moves in the off season, it's Bill Guerin. So Minnesota is going to be certainly one of those teams to watch in the off season. But yeah, Russo's onto something there. This is because they go into cap hell next year, right? Like $13 million of dead cap space.
That's crazy.
This is one of the reasons why Jack Eichel looked at it and said, It's tempting to go to Minnesota, but we'll see what happens here.
Jeff, you're the best, bud. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, boys. Be well.
You too. Thanks. Jeff Merrick, host of The Jeff Merrick Show, here on Sportsnet 650.
Sportsnet 650, breaking news.
I didn't want to do this, but I'm going to.
I respect it.
Breaking news, Elliot Freeman reporting. Connor McDavid, now a part of the Vancouver Canucks.
He left it up there, eh? He wouldn't even delete it.
In the middle of a playoff race, no less.
He wouldn't even delete the tweet. So, Friedge put out the Ted Lindsay finalists. And he didn't break the news. I mean, we all got the same release, but he tweeted it out that it was Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Roman Josi of the Nashville Predators, so he replaces Igor Shesterkin from the Hart voting, and then Connor McDavid, and for some reason he said Connor McDavid was a member of the Vancouver Canucks. Then he refused to delete the tweet because he said it was so bad, I have to leave it up. People were freaking out.
Yeah, they're freaking. I don't think anyone was freaking out. Do you think anyone actually thought, like, wait a minute,
let me get the hook right out of my mouth
right before Game 7? Have the Canucks acquired McDavid?
No, I'm just doing.
Why wouldn't Ken Holland just wait?
No, we're gonna do it right before Game 7.
Elias ordering from Skip the Dishes.
Yeah, oof. I better get the hook out of my mouth.
I heard Hughes and Pettersson are going the other way.
That's right. That's the trade. Hughes and Pettersson for McDavid.
Who says no?
Okay. Dom, be quiet.
Good breaking news, though.
It was good breaking news. What Jeff Merrick said about the assistant coaches and that he believes one of the quote-unquote minor details is who is going to comprise the coaching staff. Here's the thing about the assistant coaches. Typically what happens is you hire a coach and he gets to pick his assistants. And the only time that management may kind of, you know, stick their noses in that is if they're not very happy with the job that the assistants are doing, or that the job that the head coach is doing. Do you remember it happened with Travis Green, where some guys were removed from the staff and some guys were added? And the way I think it went was like, Travis, we're adding someone to your staff. And it was Newell Brown, by the way, that ended up getting fired. And then they were like, and I think the way it went was like, here's a list of guys that we're coming up with. You choose.
Yeah.
Now I could be wrong on that, but I could be wrong on the minor details of that. But I'm pretty sure that I'm right on the big picture stuff in that they basically said like, hey, we're telling you how to do things. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens sometimes, but it doesn't typically happen to a coach that's had such a good season.
Usually happens after a poor season. The one that really I remember where a general manager stepped in and made a statement with an assistant coaching move was in Chicago after they lost to Nashville. And they fired Mike Kitchen. Yeah. And Mike Kitchen was
I remember seeing that name so much. I was like, is this guy a genius or something? What is going on here?
He was like Joel Quenneville's best friend.
Right. That's
so
what it was
like,
too.
It's like, we're not firing your coach. We're also firing your friend.
It was like separating kids in class that talk too much.
That's exactly what it was. Joel, Mike, this isn't going to last. And then you put him in different classrooms.
You're in Mrs. Vandermeer's class now.
But that does happen more than you think with NHL coaching positions, because it's really kind of the way for the GM to exert either his influence or his thoughts without replacing the head coach or doing something addressing at the head coaching level, if that makes sense, right? So Bradshaw was a good example of that. Bradshaw was brought in by the organization.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have a huge history with Travis Green. Travis Green's guy was Nolan Baumgartner. That was his guy.
And then things got weird. Let's be honest. Things got weird with Bradshaw. Because he was brought in, and from what I've heard, a lot of the players were like, we don't know what Brad does here. And I'm not sitting here saying that Travis Green froze him out or anything, but remember that Bradshaw was brought in as a defensive specialist, and yet Nolan Baumgartner, who was Travis's good friend, was still running the PK. And then Bruce Boudreau brought in his guy for the PK. And then eventually, Bradshaw took over the PK. Like it does create some dynamics, and they aren't the cleanest dynamics.
No.
Because when you're a management group and you say, we're making you hire this guy, then what is your natural reaction to that? Like, great. Mm-hmm.
What else are you going to
tell? Here's something that I wouldn't have done that's being foisted upon me. This is really good for the relationship.
It also sets the precedent, right? It's like, what else are you going to tell me to do or force me to do? And we should be clear. We're not trying to create something out of nothing here. Like, these dynamics existed in the National Hockey League long before Jason mentioned them with Jeff Merrick 10 minutes ago. Like, it happens a lot. And there are weird working relationships that get, as you put it, foisted upon you. And sometimes they work where you didn't expect them to work because you think outside of the box that you're kind of comfortable in. And then sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's a total power grab or a power shift. We'll just have to see what happens in this regard. I need to tell you about tonight's games. As you can bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC Sportsbook. This is up at my Twitter account right now, MikeHalford604 on Twitter. I am going with the 3-game parlay tonight, and this is the loon. This is something that it's not an emotional hedge. I've got everything invested
right
in this, so I've got money and hope invested in this because I would like to have a Sunday, much like Saturday, where there's a bunch of game sevens.
Oh, okay.
So I have
I
now,
like this bet. This is
I
fun.
Have now parlayed all the teams that need to win tonight to force game seven. So I got a favorite in Pittsburgh. I got a favorite in the Rangers, In Pittsburgh, the game's in Pittsburgh. The Rangers are favored. They're at 183. I've got Dallas beating Calgary at 240. And then I got the biggest one of the night. This is the biggest underdog. The Caps have to beat the Panthers, and that's at 255. So
But the Caps are at home, right?
Yeah.
And the Stars are at home.
Yeah, I know.
It's doable. It's possible.
It is. I get what's at stake. I understand why the lines are the way that they are, right? But I feel like it worked almost to perfection last night. We got good results last night in terms of game sevens, right? Toronto did the trick by failing miserably. And then Boston pushed to game seven. And then Edmonton pushed to game seven. So if you wager on the Rangers, the Stars, and the Caps tonight, if you throw down like $20, the combined parlay odds, potential return, $224. I like it. I think it's interesting. Anyway, bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC Sportsbook. We will continue this Stanley Cup playoff conversation coming up next. On the Halford and Bruff Show, Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and Ingle Magazine is going to join us. And then 8:30, we've been really remiss in doing Ask Us Anything today, so we'll do a bunch in the final half hour of the program. The Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.